In this episode, the St. Louis Artworks apprentices, Messiah and Arlo, are joined by Joy Layden, a widely published essayist, poet, literary scholar, and nationally known speaker on transgender issues. From 2003 to 2021, she held the David and Ruth Gottesman Chair in English at Stern College for Women of Yeshiva University. Her gender transition and return to teaching in 2008 made her the first openly transgender employee of an Orthodox Jewish institution. Layden is the author of 14 books, including two which have been published just this month. Those two books include Family, a book of poems, and Once Out of Nature, a book of essays, both by Persea Books.
Okay, my name is Messiah, and I've been here at Artworks for about the last three sessions now, and I think it's pretty great.
I'm Arlo. I've been here for, this is my fifth session, I believe. I've been here for a while doing a lot of different things.
Fantastic to meet you.
This session we've been doing, we've been writing zines, and a lot of us have been mixing together like poetry with images or telling stories through comics. I made poetry and some images, and Messiah has made a comic, right?
Yeah, I made a comic. It's like about growing up as a girl or whatever around like outside influences and kind of like how that affects your perception of yourself, like the way other people see you. Yeah, the main goal of that story is to like express yourself regardless of like how people might perceive you, pretty much.
Yeah, and mine is about like living as a trans guy in this society, you know.
Well, that sounds like important work, both of those.
Thank you.
Would you like to introduce yourself, Joy?
Oh, okay. My name is Joy Layden. I am the author of 10 books of poetry. My 11th is going to come out later this year, and several books of creative nonfiction about trans things, including a book of trans theology and a memoir of gender transition. And I've got a book of essays on how gender is changing in response to recognition of trans and non-binary people. That's also coming out this year. Claim to fame was that when I came out in 2008, I became the first openly transgender professor at an Orthodox Jewish institution. I was teaching at an Orthodox university called Yeshiva University, and I stayed there till a couple of years ago. I got too sick to teach anymore. So now I write and speak and do everything that I do lying down.
It's amazing that you're still able to do that and get your voice out there.
Would you mind reading a poem of yours?
Well, I did pick one out to read, but I'm happy to read a poem that you would like me to read. It's up to you.
They did read Comfort Animal.
Because of the questions that you sent me, the poem I picked out was another poem from that collection that Comfort Animal appears in. And Comfort Animal and this poem and the whole collection are poems that they're intended not to be, like, it's poetry written not to express me. It's poems that are trying to give voice to an aspect of divinity in Jewish tradition is called the Shekhinah. And it's a pretty queer aspect of divinity because she's the female identified aspect of divinity, and she doesn't exist up there or out there beyond the human. She dwells with each of us individually and experiences everything we experience and all of our feelings, all of our thoughts, everything. She goes through it with us. In Jewish tradition, this is not a queer thing. As the female aspect of divinity, of course, she doesn't get to talk. But in these poems, she does get to talk. And in every poem, she's talking to a you, like in Comfort Animal. And it's a singular you, but it's meant to represent each individual human being. So each poem is what she's saying to each of us as she hangs out and dwells inside us. This poem is called Ready. And one more thing is each of the poems is made out of words that aren't mine. Some of the words come from a passage of the prophet Isaiah, and this one includes the line, "Fear not, I am the one who helps you." And the words are also come from a Cosmopolitan magazine article that goes with the quote. And in this case, the Cosmo article is 7 empowering life lessons from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So all of the words in the poem come from either of those sources. Ready. Are you ready to be strong? Are you ready to follow me beyond the fear that warns you to hold your tongue when cruelty and hopelessness, degradation and evil stab you through the heart? Fear likes you this way, self-loathing and numb, believing you're no one I'd ever choose. A worm in a tunnel, dust and a gale, a nameless pool of blood I could never love. I summon them all to judgment, the fears that stalk you to the ends of the earth, the shame and disgrace that nail you in your place, everything that gets in the way of you responding when I say, don't be afraid, don't be afraid. I was here before fear, and I'm there beyond it, opening fountains, trampling kings underfoot, calling you to me across generations, by paths you haven't walked, by ways you cannot imagine. I'm the mother who really sees, the father who understands you, every version, future and past, real and imagined, cypress and desert, clear, fluid light, pressure of mountain, solitary pine. We have nothing to fear, nothing to prove. Are you ready to be strong? Time to remake the world.
That was amazing.
Thank you for sharing that. The apprentices have some writing that they wanted to share as well, if that's okay.
Of course. I'm looking forward to it.
So I'll read mine first. Mine is called Day by Day. It's about how stuck you can feel with your identity and also the outrage of seeing so many trans people take their lives or be killed out of hatred last year, especially, but also just continuously, especially after Next Benedict's death. I wrote this one. Our choices are made upon birth, lives decided upon our worth. My life is not mine. My choices are made as my people beside me die day by day. I cannot save them, but I will try my best to show everyone else that we are the same as they are. Human beings with thoughts and feelings. So many have died, their lives cut short, unfairly taken just because someone thought them forsaken. Every day I watch as innocents lose their lives based on their name, pronouns, or identity. The river of hate flows unchanging. Day by day, I watch and await a time where I can be me, truly me, without the fear of dying based on my identity.
Well, that is all too relevant.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm afraid this year is going to be as bad or worse as last year.
Yeah, same, especially because of the election and all the propaganda and stuff going right now. But we can only do our best to try and get our voices out there to try and change what we can.
And that is a really strong statement. Thank you.
Okay, my zine is about, it says, I was born a girl. Growing up, my mother started to teach me about men specifically. She told me to never talk to strangers, especially the older men. I listened, but as a kid, it all seemed a bit extreme. But as I got older, my face and my body changed, and so did the way I was treated. I felt like I was forced into a negative spotlight. I had to learn how to say stop and no, which didn't always work. So I tried to make myself feel smaller and quieter and less appealing. And my only concern was to find a way to not be perceived. I felt the need to hide my smile and keep my head down so as not to give anyone a reason to talk to me or to stare me up and down. But there were other people who looked like me, who dressed and acted how they wanted without worry for if they were asking for it or not. And that motivated me to try new things that I probably wouldn't have before. And it also made me realize it's okay to love yourself and it's okay to want to look and feel nice for yourself. And if anyone decides to lewd that or make you feel uncomfortable, it's probably because of their own sick ideals.
Well, that is a really precise and articulation of really important and really painful things to say out loud. That, I think, is going to help people.
Thank you so much. It's really nice to hear you say that.
The apprentices did have a couple questions kind of go along with their writing and your poems.
With your writing, do you ever like think of it as a form of protest? Do you use it like to get your voice out there?
I've written some poems that are directly a protest, you know, against this or that. And I don't think that that's been my best work. I think other poets are better at doing that than I am. I also think that my poems grow pretty slowly. Like I write them, and often the first draft can be really tied closely to what's going on right at the moment, whether that's something terrible that's happening in the news or what's going on outside my window. But as I work them over months and months and sometimes years, it's not like there are other people who can really nail things that are happening right now and respond to them right away. In fact, in the 19th century, before the Civil War, it was common for newspapers to publish poems about not just current events, but like responses to speeches in the U.S. Senate on the front page of the newspaper. Walt Whitman used to write some of those. That was like seen, poetry was seen as a way of responding directly to politics in the way that op-ed pieces in newspapers or online are seen now. So there's a great tradition of it in American literature. It's just not something that I've been great at. So I'd say the poem that I read was as close as I come to writing a protest poem. And the protest, you notice, is not tied to any particular events. It's tied to the feelings that keep us believing that we're powerless and unlovable.
Yeah. It's very interesting to know that it used to be in like responses to speeches and stuff. I wouldn't have thought that people would make poems in responses to speeches. That's really cool. I wouldn't have thought that people would do that, especially even back then.
It blew my mind when I read that. Actually, poetry was more important than fiction as a literary form in the 19th century until the Civil War. It started changing after that. And it was a great form. It was used by all of these oppressed groups. They would write poems of protest, and that would be like published in the newspaper. There were a million newspapers too, so they were always looking for content.
I have a question as well. How do you think art comforts the afflicted or afflicts the comforted?
Oh, I think that that is a really interesting question. I've mostly heard it as a statement about what journalists should do. And I don't think I've ever heard it as a formulation of what poetry should do. But as I was reflected on it, my immediate response was, everybody I've ever known, and this certainly includes me, is both afflicted and comfortable. You know, like I grew up afflicted as a trans person, but way, way too comfortable as a white person, for example. And I think there are some people who are in such bad condition that they're probably just afflicted. Like I think a lot of people in Gaza would fall into that category now. But in many situations, you know how social groups work. Like if you're part of a social group, some people are going to be on top, and then in another social group, they're on the bottom, right? There are a lot of ways that people suffer that are visible and invisible. Even the wealthiest, most powerful people can be afflicted in some ways. So I think a lot of my poems don't comfort anybody. They're trying to do something other than comfort. But I think comforting is a really great and very ancient traditional function of poetry. American society doesn't have a lot of real roles for poets the way it does for example, pop music. Popular music, not just pop music, but popular music, comfort, love songs, right? There are things that we look to popular music to give us. We always look to that. And not too many people look at poetry for those things. But I think comfort is a great mission for a poet because there are always people who need comfort. I'm not sure I can identify who the people are who need comfort from the outside based on my own experiences. So what I would say is that I think poetry should always make us a little uncomfortable, like everybody, because it should make things at least a little unfamiliar. It should make language unfamiliar. It should make what it describes unfamiliar, like a poem's describing a tree. You want it to describe a tree in a way that makes people say, oh, really? Oh, I never thought about a tree that way, right? So that's the technical term for that is defamiliarization. And it's a form of being made uncomfortable that people need, because the more familiar things become, the less vividly we perceive them. Like, we're just like, I don't even look at that tree. It's always outside my window. Who cares? Right? So I need somebody to wake me up and make me uncomfortable. So I'm like, oh, wow, that's amazing. There are buds on that tree. This is extraordinary. It's alive in a whole different way. So I think that that's a way that poetry should make everybody uncomfortable. And I think that a way that poetry offers this comfort in many poems, even very painful poems, is when it does what your work does, which is it puts into words difficult things, things that are so hard, we're not even sure they can fit into words. And because we're not sure they can fit into words, we're not sure whether we're alone with them. And to the extent that poetry can make us feel like, oh my gosh, there's words for this part of being human or that part of being human, I think it offers a tremendous comfort to people who are afflicted by that fear that we're really alone.
Yeah. Thank you. That's a very interesting perspective that honestly, I probably never thought about before you just said it.
Yeah, I agree, because sometimes when I was writing my poems for my zine, it was really hard to put how I was feeling or what I was thinking into words. And it took multiple rounds of editing to finally make it like concise and actually portray what I was trying to say.
When I was in graduate school, I had a really tough time in my PhD program, and I thought I was going to flunk out because I was like, I'm a poet. I don't have to really do this academic stuff. And the teachers were like, no, you have to do this academic stuff. And it was hard for me. So I actually went to a teacher and I said, you know, I know what I want to say, but it's really hard to find the words to say it. And he said, isn't that actually the work of a writer? And it's like, all right, yeah, I know that with poetry, it's going to be hard. But somehow I thought it should be easy with academic writing. But that is the work. And I think that's why it can be so comforting, that you've done the hard work of taking things that nobody knows how to say and finding a way to say them. Now, this is kind of a narcissistic question, but I'm just curious how you came across my work. I'm not the most famous poet in America, so how'd you come across me?
We read Comfort Animal during one of our days that we were at work, right? And me and Messiah both really liked your work and really liked how we could relate our writing to your writing. And yeah.
Thank you. And I'm wondering, when you read that poem, did you feel like it was in some way a protest poem or in some way afflicting the comfortable and comforting the afflicted?
It definitely made me feel a little like uncomfortable, but not in a bad way. It was like, oh yeah, we need to talk about this.
Yeah,
but,
I agree. That's how it made me feel too. I was just the right amount of unsettling to make you think really hard.
Awesome.
Well, thank you so much for spending time with us, Joy. We really appreciate the conversation. I'll let Arlo and Messiah close out.
Yeah, thank you so much for your time. It was amazing getting the chance to talk to you, and I loved, this experience.
Yeah, me too. It was nice to meet you and to hear you read one of your poems for us. I hope you like get super famous one day so I can like, I talked to Joy.
You know, you and me both, I really hope you get that pleasure. This has really been awesome to talk with you, and it's been an honor. I feel honored that you picked me out to talk with. Thank you so much.
This podcast series and programming by Your Words STL was made possible through grants from the National Endowment of the Arts and the Poetry Foundation. The music was made by the local St. Louis musician, Joey Ferber.